Books of the Bible. 2 Timothy is Paul's last letter before his execution. He encourages Timothy to persevere amidst suffering. Paul had suffered for the sake of the gospel, but he also knew the beauty and power of the gospel. He charges Timothy to cling to and preach the gospel. When you face opposition, do not fear or be ashamed, but trust God and rely on His word. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go back in time, shall we? This is Wretched Radio. But before we go back in time, let me remind you that time is running out for our Truth Unhindered campaign. This is our dollar-for-dollar match campaign so that we can give away all of our Sunday school resources to churches and individuals around the globe. We're so close, but time really is running out. Would you please consider joining us, partnering with us so that we can give away more stuff than we already give away, which is actually a lot of stuff. You can learn more about the Truth Unhindered campaign and help us hit our goal. And thank you to everybody who has supported us so far. Super grateful for that. Learn more at fortisinstitute.org/truth. Now we're going back in time. Let me take you back to the early 70s, and no doubt if you're an evangelical, you've at least heard the name Francis Schaeffer, Mr. Labrie. He was a big thinker. Not only did he rightly assess what was happening in society in the 60s and 70s, but he was rather poignant, not prophetic, but poignant in predicting the issues of our day. In 1970-ish, he had a debate with B.F. Skinner. Do you remember that name? If you studied psychology, he's one of the big boys. He's a behavioralist, and he was all the rage on university campuses at the time. And B.F. Skinner engaged in a debate with Francis Schaeffer, and it focused a lot on the book by B.F. Skinner called, get ready for this, Beyond Freedom and Dignity. What? In other words, these are kind of outmoded ideas. We don't need freedom and dignity. We could no longer afford to keep promoting freedom and dignity. And of course, Francis Schaeffer responded with his own book then, by the way, called Back to Freedom and Dignity. So Skinner wrote his book in 71, Beyond Freedom and Dignity. Francis Schaeffer the next year writes Back to Freedom and Dignity. And then he went on to argue but defending these concepts of dignity and freedom is essential to human personhood. And that is the issue that we are seeing played out today. And Francis Schaeffer predicted it, the issue of human dignity. What does it mean to be human? Where do rights come from? What is the intrinsic value of a human being? He knew that these would become the hot button issues. And incidentally, it's been Carl Truman who's been talking about the importance of this subject, stressing anthropology is a really big deal, and that Christians enter the marketplace of ideas to defend our rights come from God. Our value is ascribed to us from God. That is why we esteem people. And it doesn't matter how developed they are. It doesn't matter their skin color. Though it doesn't matter about socioeconomics. What matters is they are image bearers of God. How right was Francis Schaeffer? Well, let's take a look at today's headlines, shall we? From the New York Times, are embryos property or people? Even the courts don't know. Now, this goes back to a situation in Alabama in 2020. Somebody at a fertility clinic was carrying a tray of fertilized eggs because typically when they do the IVF process, they take a number of eggs, about 15, 10, 15, 20 if they can, to implant, fertilize, and then implant into the woman and then do selective reduction. An individual was carrying a tray of these babies, dropped them, which of course destroyed them, and the court had to weigh in. And the Alabama court actually said, these are actual people. They're extra uterine children. They're outside of the uterus. Nevertheless, they're children. Well, guess what? That brought up all kinds of court battles and different legislation being forwarded. And the courts are all wrestling with this when they shouldn't have to. It's easy when you remember human dignity. There is an intrinsic value, and it doesn't matter their size, their level of development, their environment, or their degree of dependence. What matters is they are a human being. And as long as I brought up the subject of IVF, was reading an article in the Catholic News Agency. This is stuff you should know about IVF. This is a big thing. And I get the heart of those who can't have the child that they so long to have. I get it. And at this moment, I still personally believe that if IVF can be done in a way that does not end up taking the life of other extrauterine children or the children that do get planted in the uterus, but because they implant so many, they have to reduce. Otherwise, the mother couldn't possibly carry that many and all would be lost. We've got to reject that. But could a couple implant one or two fertilized eggs if they're willing to have twins? At this moment, I see that as using science morally, but that ain't what's going on. And this article reveals this. The industry's death toll for preborn life is higher than that of abortion. In other words, all of these fertilized eggs, which, by the way, each round of IVF costs somewhere between $20,000 and $30,000 for a single treatment. By the way, success rates 50% for women under the age of 35, but it gets worse for women who are older. When they extract 10 to 15 eggs, according to the clinic, 80% will be viable, and about 80% of viable eggs will successfully fertilize to create embryos, making about 7 or 8 embryos per patient. And obviously, then the mother cannot carry 7 or 8, so they freeze them. They estimate more than 238,000 patients attempted IVF in 2021 alone, which has created over the years 1.8 million embryos created through IVF that have never been born. That is what is the sinful side of IVF. And the only way, in my opinion, to navigate our way through these choppy waters is by returning to, going back to, like Francis Schaeffer encouraged, freedom and dignity for people. Without having a high view of humanity, you're just going to keep seeing more and more of these preposterous contemporary issues that we're dealing with. Here's another one. Gender-affirming care for children. Really? Gender-affirming care for children? This is from Joe Carter. In the United States, 3.3% of adolescents identify as transgender. I think it's a social contagion. I think that's ridiculously high. A further 2.2% question whether they might be. It's a trend. Rather than exploring why young people are 329% more likely than adults to identify as transgender, shouldn't we be asking that question? Why are so many, hey, now that it's cool to be trans, why don't we see the same stats among adults who have been repressing it because of, well, you know, what male Christians? But you don't see that. And so instead, we simply talk about the need for gender-affirming care. The HHS recently released a report, Treatment for Pediatric Gender Dysphoria, a review of evidence and best practices. Well, I could have written that for them. Son, we're going to have to encourage you to get your thinking in alignment with the way that you are. Young lady, we're going to help you with your thinking so that you can accept the way that God has already made you and determined your gender. One of the report's significant findings is that the scientific support for gender transition treatments is exceedingly weak. From the HHS, the overall quality of evidence is very low, and yet we keep promoting it and we keep pushing it. Why? Because human dignity, since Francis Schaeffer's day, has morphed into human autonomy, where feelings determine facts. If this is what I think I am, then I am. Voltaire is rolling over in his grave. That's the contemporary understanding of human dignity, that the individual gets to determine what their dignity is. That's chaos. The HHS review also documents serious risks associated with puberty blockers, hormone therapies, and gender-related surgeries. Not a shocker here. The United States is, by the way, at odds with trends in Europe. Even Europe has, because they were further ahead of us on this issue, they've determined this is not the way that we should be treating minors. This is not the way that we should be providing health care for confused children. What is at the center of this argument, whether it is the life issue, whether it is transgender, whether the LGBTQ issue? It is the issue of human dignity. By the way, just as a quick aside, did you read the article titled "Christianity Has Long Revered Saints Who Could Be Called Transgender Today"? Take a moment just to laugh at that. They're trying to say, hey, that person, they kind of talk like a girl, so therefore they were transgender. Utter nonsense. Nevertheless, human dignity is at the core of these debates. And anthropology is something that Christians must be leading the way in. That individuals have rights not based on any other criteria than God. This is Wretched Radio.
You've most likely been there, sitting across from a therapist, staring at their degrees on the wall, listening while they give you a diagnosis and tell you what pill and prescription they think are going to cure all your ills. You walk out of the office carrying a label, and you wonder why you feel even heavier than you did before you walked in. That's why Dr. Greg Gifford wrote Lies My Therapist Told Me, because sometimes it's not the medication or even the diagnosis that's the real issue. It's that the whole system doesn't touch what's going on beneath the surface. Look, not every struggle is solved with a pill. Not every label tells the entire story. What if addiction's not just a disease? What if your anxiety is not just a chemical imbalance? And what if the diagnosis handed to your child is not the final word? The world gives its answers, but rarely does it ever deal with the heart. Scripture does. Order Lies My Therapist Told Me today at FortisInstitute.org/lies. That's FortisInstitute.org/lies. You know what's remarkable? Currently, right now, at this present time, there are over 4 million podcasts in production. And something unexpected has happened. Fortis Institute's podcasts have quietly climbed the charts, all of them in at least the top 5% of all podcasts worldwide, 3 of them in the top 2%. Now, we're not here to shout from the rooftops about rankings. We're actually here because truth matters. For 25 years, we've been steadfast. First as Wretched Radio, then as Gospel Partners Media, now standing firm as Fortis Institute. Todd Friel, Adam Tyson, Brad Bigney, Greg Gifford, John Krotz, Libby Glossin, real teachers addressing real issues. And you can find it all on the Fortis Plus app. Completely free. Hundreds of hours of content already there. Absolutely free. Download it, use it, share it, and then partner with us at FortisInstitute.org because we truly believe the church deserves better. FortisInstitute.org. So if we were going to be honest with one another, we would have to admit that every day our phone buzzes with celebrity scandals and political outrage and notifications of TikTok trends, all the stuff that doesn't matter. But what if your phone could deliver something different? Because it can. Meet Fortis Plus. If you haven't already downloaded it yet, I want to urge you to take that opportunity right now. It's free and it will replace noise with nourishment. Picture this, 7 new pieces of content every single day. And I'm not talking clickbait or gossip. I'm talking real truth for real life. The app is already full of hundreds of hours of content. Again, completely free. And when I say free, I mean free. I don't mean hidden costs and temporary trials and premium tiers. No subscription traps at all. Because while everyone else all over the world is selling you something, we are giving something away. Fortis Plus. Download it right now where you download your apps, or just go to fortisplus.org, because what feeds your mind shapes your life.
Hermeneutics. Hermeneutics is the art and science of interpreting scripture. When reading the Bible, begin with these 3 questions. What does it say? What does it mean? What difference does it make? Many common mistakes can be avoided with basic hermeneutics. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Leave it to Switzerland. This is Wretched Radio. Survey says there is one branch of Christianity that is actually growing in Switzerland, which would still call itself, believe it or not, a Christian nation, even as Christianity getting smaller and smaller in its rearview window. There is one branch, at least according to a new study, that is actually growing and thriving. Guess what it is? Conservative evangelicalism. Those that are being marked as praying people, helping people, worshiping people. In other words, not trendy Christians. The branch that is being identified in Switzerland as being something authentic and perhaps worthy of individual consideration is the old path Christianity. I'm not talking about stodgy. I'm not talking about chanting without instrumentation. I am saying, though, that the branch in Switzerland that is seeing growth is more traditional, more conservative, not frilly, which leads us to an article written in the Christian Post. Dear Church, a cure for the deconstruction epidemic. It's all the rage. This is another social contagion, unfortunately. These are kids, according to the Barna Group, 64% of young adults 18 to 29 who grew up in the church have either left the faith or are no longer practicing it. Lifeway Research, of course, revealed 2/3 of young adults stopped attending church regularly for at least a year after turning 18. What's going on? The answer is they're deconstructing. The question is why? Why are we losing the kids? Do you know how many gazillions of dollars we have poured into youth programs to make sure that the kids come to church? So we've amused them to pieces. We've created all kinds of comfortable settings for them. We've dumbed down preaching to the point of being unrecognizable as distinctly Christian. The dimmed lights, the pizza parties, the gross out games. Don't we have enough statistical evidence to prove the seeker-sensitive approach to keeping our kids in church? It just ain't cutting it. It is not working. Instead, the kids, they look at evangelical Christianity, at least of the American manifestation, and they conclude, this, my life on this, it's dopey. They knew it when they were in the youth groups, but now that they're not, they don't have to go. And isn't it funny? Why aren't the 18 and the 20-year-olds still clamoring, come on, man, more pizza parties and gross out games? No, they run off to university. They start to grow up. They get treated like adults. They hear these erudite professors pontificating about being bigger than your puritanical Christian upbringing, and they're wowed by it. And what do they go about the business of doing? Deconstructing. From the article, they often describe it as a process of deconstructing their inherited beliefs in search of something more authentic. You mean whipped cream and peanut butter and toilets and Tootsie Rolls? That isn't authentic enough for the kids? Of course it isn't. Some people knew better, but the major trend in evangelicalism was to dumb down Christianity, to amuse the kids. And guess what? They have rejected it. It has utterly failed. I know the times have changed. There are variables to this consideration. But when we used to catechize kids, when we used to force them to memorize Bible verses, guess what? It seemed to stick a little bit more than the statistics that we're seeing for contemporary evangelical youth groups. This author wrote, people are not leaving the faith because the church isn't cool enough. They're leaving because it has lost its authenticity, trying to be relevant, and its spiritual authority in an attempt to be more convenient. Ain't that the truth? Now, does this mean that we need to go back to being just so old school for the sake of being old school? No. Christianity is brilliant. One of its brilliances, can that be a plural? One of its brilliant aspects is that it stays the same and yet can have different expressions in different cultures in different centuries. Note, nothing about its message changes, but how we do things does. Come on, everything, parking lots are different. Sound systems are different. Some of the music that we produce, it's different. And that's okay. Those things can be perfectly fine variables as long as the truth never changes. So I'm not suggesting we go back in time and act like the Amish and pretend, well, we're not really up to speed in the 21st century. We're about 1940 now. That's not what I think that we should be attempting to do, but we should be recognizing kids don't want stupid anymore. They don't want trite. They don't want silly. They don't want juvenile. They want something that's real. From the article, countless churches, in response to these horrifying statistics from Barna and Lifeway, scrambled to make themselves more relevant by becoming more digital, more progressive, more casual, more inclusive, and more entertaining. Sermons are shorter, worship is trendier, sanctuaries resemble concert venues, and Christian influencers package theology in TikTok-sized chunks. And it's not working. It's been a failed experiment. These hipster inventors of what church should be, not your grandmother's church, they were wrong. And I think we have all of the scientific proof we need, not to mention the biblical support, to say we got to stop doing church for juveniles. Excuse me for the interruption, but I was in the airport in Pensacola. Did I mention? With food poisoning. Nevertheless, wandering through the... No, it wasn't Pensacola. Maybe it was in the Dallas airport. I was somewhere, not in Atlanta. And there was a gaming room. There was a place where all of these young people, you sit down at in a comfortable recliner with your headphones on and the thing, and you pay to game while at the airport. In other words, I got to game. And I'm sorry, when I saw those young people in there, I tried to formulate this in a way that might sting without being offensive to you. But it was my observation that every young person who is hooked on gaming will not reach their maximum human potential. You will not be all that God could make you. You're being distracted with childish things, with glittering things, and it's stunting you. It is keeping you from being more interesting. Instead of playing a game in the course of a week for, say, 30 hours, what if you went back and read that Francis Schaeffer book on freedom and dignity? You'd be smarter. You'd be wiser. You'd be more interesting to have dinner with. And you might be able to sort through contemporary issues in a way that your peers simply cannot fathom. Because you're investing your time and energies into things that are growing you. If you're a young person and you would take advantage of an airport gaming station, let me encourage you to reconsider how you're spending your energies, because if they are going into gaming, you will not reach your maximum human potential. You will not be as desirable as a spouse. You will not be the type of man that a woman looks at and goes, there's one I can trust. There's one I can be willing to change my name for. There's one that I could submit to. Think about how you are spending your time. Back to youth groups. The early church didn't grow because it adapted to Roman entertainment or mimicked Greek philosophy. It grew because it was different. It was holy. It was countercultural. It was biblical, and it was rooted. The earliest followers didn't build a movement on marketing or by accommodating theology and changing church to make it apparently hip and relevant. They build it on enduring ancient practices. Doing things that were just, what? You don't work on that day? What? You read a Bible to your children? You do something called communion? You live in a community? From the article, it closes, "This is the invitation of the Spirit in every age, not to chase trends, but to return to the well-worn paths where the saints of old walk. The ancient paths are not outdated. They are tested." And we're living in a generation that is not just questioning Christianity, but longing for something real. Is there something ancient enough, holy enough, rooted enough to hold the weight of our pain and our questions? Is there something worth dedicating my life to? And the answer is absolutely, if we will show them by returning to the ancient paths. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.